Thank you, everybody. Welcome to a special board meeting, Rancho Mariota Community Service District 420, for some of those, Randy, 2022. This meeting is a combination meeting that's going to be held in person and via Zoom due to the governor's extension of COVID. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Roll call, Paula.
Director Mabee?
Aye.
Director Jenko?
Here.
Director Butler?
Yes.
Director Merchant?
Director Merchant isn't here today.
Director Paul? Director Paul, can you hear me? He's fine.
You are muted.
I looked.
Director Paul, can you hear me?
I'm going to put the long voice down.
He's not muted.
Is he trying to zoom in?
Yes.
Okay, then we can keep working on it and we can keep going.
Okay.
No worries. Item number two, as I discussed earlier, is consider the findings of the majority of the votes under the governor code stated above. It's the continuation of the COVID-19 emergency. The board has reconsidered the circumstances, state of emergency. And so it'll be a meeting in person with authorization to do a teleconference, quote unquote, Zoom, pursuant to the government code. Moving on to item number three.
The board's got to act on that item.
Oh, we have to accept it?
Yeah, it's got
to
be.
I'll make it as a motion to accept item number two. We'll need a roll call vote.
Sorry.
Actually, thank you. I need a second.
Okay. Thank you, Director Jenko. And Director Butler?
Yes.
And Director Paul?
If he has a Verizon phone, he's going to have trouble getting
it. Oh, Verizon's, yeah. Verizon's down.
I know.
Well, 21,000 people. Having trouble in this area.
21,000 people across the country.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's. I see him here on the iPad, but it looks like neither of us are muted, and I don't know if he can hear me. Let me
send him a text.
Yeah.
So Tim made the motion, Randy made the second.
Linda said yes.
I haven't gotten to the vote part. Yes, yes, yes. If he's not here, he doesn't abstain, right? He's just not here.
He's absent, correct.
So they're just typing absent.
Yeah. You just treat them as absent.
Oh, I heard something.
Oh, I hear him. Nope, we hear you. Whatever you just did worked. So.
Where's your volume?
I just turned it up.
Okay. Next, the agenda.
Okay.
You have the vote on item number two?
There we
yes.
got it.
Yep. Item number three, consider adoption for the agenda. Before I make a motion, any board members have any questions on the items in the consent calendar or anything else on the calendar? I make a motion for item number three to consider adoption of the agenda. Can I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, roll call vote. Director Mabee?
Aye.
Director Jenko?
Aye.
Director Butler?
Yes.
Director Paul?
Aye.
Good. Okay.
Item number four is closed session. Board will go into closed session for employee discipline, dismissal, release related performance evaluation. Upon coming out of closed session, we will either start the meeting up again or wait until 5 o'clock to continue on the rest of it. So, closed session.
All right, thank you. Go ahead and stop recording the Zoom right now.
Are we bringing Director Paul into the
yes.
to the room?
Yes. Okay.
Just carry him on the computer.
Going to
yeah, just put him on the back.
I'm gonna run too.
Okay.
Bel Air and get some cookies. Where's the shop rated under Measure J funding security from that point forward? To begin with, the funds collected through Measure J were sufficient. In fact, more than enough funds could be collected. They would have collected more than they needed in the first few years. So the first few years, they didn't even collect the full amount. They collected not the full amount. After a few years, they realized that the district realized they didn't have enough funds coming in. So they brought the amount collected to the current rate. Measure J allows for an annual increase no more than 2%. And that 2% increase, there's about 3-4 years ago where there wasn't a raise in the Measure J 2%, but the following year they did a 4% increase, and it's been 2% ever since. For about the last 10 years, the funding has not been enough from Measure J to pay for security services, even at the minimum staffing that we're currently trying to achieve with the funds that we have. And as that became a problem, funding security, the district started using property tax funds to help support Measure J, or help support security. And then a few years ago, or 2 years ago, we did a formal cost allocation plan, which is a really good business practice by government agencies. And it increased the security share of administrative overhead, which is roughly about 1/3 of the entire administrative overhead budget. And so there's kind of a sudden jump in how much property tax was required in over 1 year to the next. And legally, we have to apply the cost of administration to the departments for which we provide services. And the reality is that security clearly uses up at least 1/3 of the administrative time for district staff. So the board asked me to figure something out. I recommended that we hire a firm, a professional polling firm, to do a survey to see the likelihood of the voters' appetite for approving a special tax, and it turns out to be a special partial tax, to increase the amount of revenue available for security and to allow property taxes to find their way into our reserve accounts when they're unspent, as opposed to paying for security. And so we hired True North. We did an RFP. True North was the best candidate, and I think they've proven that. I'm going to skip through the discussion and kind of just go to the timeline. All this happened, this really began in February of 21 when we hired True North after an RFP on a $29,502 contract to do the work. Timothy McClarney, who owns the company, he came up to Rancho Marietta for a few days. We initiated the whole project with a town hall meeting held at the country club. We had 75 people attend. That helped us get kind of the ball rolling. A couple months later, August 25th and 26th of last year, Timothy was up here. He met with various stakeholder work groups. We had meetings during the day, we had meetings at night, and I see some of the people who were at those meetings in the room here at the district. And then we worked on the questions, and we rely on our experts when we need to, and Timothy's an expert in this workspace, and so he helped develop questions, and he built a strategy to where he believes he can give us a good representation of the survey results. He mailed out 3,000 mailers to registered voters within the district, of which there's about 4,800 voters today, registered voters. And within a few weeks, he had addressed 673 people had answered the polling questions, which is a really good turnout. We got his report. We worked, we gave us his draft, and then we presented this to the Finance Committee last Thursday night, and what I think was one of the better meetings I've attended here at the district. There was a lot of community involvement, which is the point of having these public meetings, is to get community involvement. And I felt that that was a very useful meeting, and the board asked me, or the committee asked me, to bring this forward to the board for consideration. And that's where we are today. What's going to happen if approved? Well, we will start the process of working with Clifford Moss and the attorney and the special tax consultant to put everything together. But to begin with, I want to say that I want to say a couple things. There's some questions about whether or not we're going to fund gate services or only patrol services. After further consideration and meeting with our district council, it's clear to me that this being a partial tax, it will pay for either gate or patrol operations. The idea is the district is responsible for the security of the district administrative staff, and more directly, Kelly Benitez and his team were responsible for security being provided to the district. So it was incorrect for me to identify that it would not pay for the gate, because I rely on Kelly to decide what's the best interest of the safety for all the residents in the district. And again, the parcel tax is a tax that would be applied equally to all parcels within the district. So the folks at Bel Air, who are right now paying hundreds of dollars a month for Measure J security tax, will only pay the same amount as the folks in the village. The people who own large pieces of undeveloped land, they pay a lot for security. They'll pay for one 40-acre parcel, they'll pay the same as Ms. Director Mabee pays for security at his house. So it's equally applied throughout the district, and that's kind of a key issue, which is why I wanted to go back and make it clear that if we needed to, Kelly could apply staff who could be funded with this special tax going forward. So enough of listening to me. I would introduce Timothy, but he does a good job all by himself, and so I'm going to let Timothy McClarney, we're going to give him access to Paula's computer, be able to run the PowerPoint himself, but do we want to hook it up to the TV?
Do you want us to hold questions?
How's that?
Got you on there.
Yeah, probably until
that works.
We've got to connect to the TV really quick, so stand by.
Can you guys see this? You've already seen the presentation, right? So I'm pointing a little bit that way. Okay.
Okay, Timothy, we're ready to go.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Good evening, Tom, and good evening to the board and members of the audience and the board meeting. I'm Dr. Tim McClarney, president of True North Research, and as Tom mentioned, we're a firm that specializes in working with public agencies throughout the state and using surveys to help them develop a statistically reliable understanding of the communities and the customers that they serve. A little bit of background to date. My business partner and I, working as a two-person team over the last 20 years, have designed and conducted over 1,200 research studies for public agencies. And about half of the studies that we are doing these days are what we call revenue measure feasibility studies, like what we're going to be talking about here tonight, where the goal is to understand if it's feasible for an agency to move forward with some type of revenue measure. And by feasible, I mean if they were to put it on the ballot, there's a reasonable chance of success. And if it is feasible, to identify how would they go about structuring that measure in a way that it's consistent with the type of measure their community is interested in supporting. Tonight's PowerPoint just covers the highlights of the survey results, and my plan is to go through them, and then we can have some questions at the back end of the presentation if that works for everybody. And by the way, just for everyone's understanding, while I'm presenting here, I can actually see what I'm showing you, but I can't see anybody else's boxes, and so if somebody speaks to me, I don't have a name associated with it until I stop sharing screen, just to let you know that. So let's go ahead and jump into the slides here. So before we talk about the results, help us take a quick moment to talk about the methodology of the study. Survey was conducted in February of this year, and we spoke with a random sample of 673 voters in Rancho Murrieta who are what we call likely November 2022 voters. These are voters who we would expect to actually cast ballots in the upcoming November election based on when they registered to vote in the district, what elections they actually participated in the past, and some other demographics. These 673 voters are out of a total of 3,981 likely November voters. So we've got by survey standards, we have a high percentage of your likely electorate within our sample. But obviously when it comes to inferential statistics, it's not so much how many people you talk to, it is how you choose the people you talk to that allows you to be able to extrapolate a survey like this from a sample of 673 and know with a certain margin of error what all of your likely voters think. And the sampling process that we use is actually not just random, it's called stratified and clustered random sampling, where that process ensures us that when we're done with data collection, that sample of folks that we have, the 673, it is actually matches what the profile is of your likely November 2022 universe on all the dimensions that we know are related to how voters vote on tax measures. So things like age and gender and partisanship we control for. We also control for household party type. That's probably the single best predictor of how an individual is going to vote on a tax measure. And so we control for all these things so that we ensure that the sample that we have and which we're using to make inferences about all of your likely voters, in fact, matches what that voter universe looks like. Once individuals were selected for the survey, we recruited them using phone, text, and email. And we also allowed them to participate in the survey by telephone or online at a password-protected website, whichever was their preference. And now, because this was a random sample of 673 and not a census of all your likely November voters, it does have, as I mentioned before, a margin there due to sampling. In this case, it's plus or minus 3.4%. What that means is we can be 95% confident that the results I'll share with you tonight are within 3.4% of what we would have found had we spoken with all of your likely November voters. So from here, I'm going to just go ahead and jump into the results. At the outset of the survey, we asked a few warm-up questions to get an understanding of how respondents view their community is. And the first of this was we asked simply, how would you rate the overall quality of life in your community? Would you say it is excellent, good, fair, poor, or very poor? As you can see here on the slide, folks who live in Rancho Murrieta have a very high opinion of the quality of life in the community. 97% used excellent or good to describe the quality of life. Now, following that, we asked them if they could change one thing to make Rancho Murrieta a better place to live, what change would they like to see? This question was presented in an open-ended manner, meaning that we didn't provide them with the list of choices you see here and said pick one. What we did is we allowed them to tell us in their own words what change they'd like to see. We went back and reviewed those verbatim responses and then grouped them into the categories you see here. So at the top of the list, number one change mentioned by 26% of folks was something related to improving public safety, security, and reducing crime in the community. About one out of four respondents hit on that. We also had about 20% who mentioned providing a new country club, community center, and a pool. And that was followed by limiting growth and development and then enforcing community rules and codes at about 9%. So this gives you a sense of what's top of mind for residents in Rancho Murrieta in terms of some of the things that they'd like to change about the community. Now from there, we went to what we call our importance of issues question. And for each of the issues you see here on the slide, we simply asked folks to tell us how important is this issue to you. Is it extremely important or very important? Is it somewhat important, not at all important? And what we've done here is, although they were presented in a random order for every respondent, we have sorted them from high to low based on that combined percentage of folks who said it's either extremely important or very important. And that combined percentage is shown off to the right. We asked this question in part because it's just a nice warm-up question, gets folks thinking about local issues, but it's also an opportunity for us to understand how the items that would be addressed by this potential revenue measure, how do those stack up against other issues in the community? In particular, how do they stack up against the issue of preventing local tax increases? So you can see at the top of the list, 97%, the number one issue was maintaining an ample supply of safe drinking water. At 97%, extremely or very important. That was followed by maintaining a low crime rate, protecting local property values, maintaining local streets and roads, and then preventing trespassing in the community and on down. One of the things you do see at the very bottom there, preventing local tax increases, that checked in at 60%. So there's about a 22-point difference in the percentage of folks who assigned either extremely or very important to maintaining a low crime rate at 92 versus preventing local tax increases at 60. So the fact that the community is rating some of these security issues, crime-related issues, higher up in this list than they are preventing local tax increases, this is part of what plays into why we're seeing some of the strength of results we are later in the poll when we start asking about a potential revenue measure related to these items. Now from there, we get right to what we call the initial ballot test. And the idea is, before we get into a deeper conversation in the survey with respondents, start talking about in more detail how the funds could be spent, talking about possible tax rates that could be associated with the measure, conveying arguments pro and con, we want to first present them with a mock-up of what we think that 75-word ballot statement could look like and get their reaction. It's a really good gauge, the initial ballot test is, of where your voters are on the natural with respect to this proposal. So one of the things, a couple of things I'm going to point out about this proposal, you can see that it was set at a rate of $298 annually per parcel. It would raise about $800,000 annually until ended by voters, meaning that there's no particular sunset on this measure and that all the money stays local, right? It can't be taken away by the state or used by the county or any other purpose. So that's the 75-word ballot statement that we tested, and here are the results. At that initial ballot test, we had 60% of respondents say that they would support this proposal. You had 31% who were opposed. You had about 9% who were unsure or prefer not to answer the question. So although you've got a clear majority support at 60%, in the state of California, for a parcel tax measure like this one, as that is providing dedicated funds to particular services, it requires a two-thirds support level. So we're about 7 points below that two-thirds threshold, although, again, we have a clear majority of support in favor of the proposal. One of the things that's, if you dig behind this result, you start looking at the levels of support by different subgroups, one of the most striking things about that is how even support is for this measure by partisanship. You know, as you might imagine, if you've been paying attention at all over the last few years, the politics of this country have become more partisan, more polarized. And we tend to see that when we're looking at support levels for revenue measures. You tend to see that there's a pretty big gap between Republicans and Democrats, for example, when it comes to proposed local tax measures. And yet, when you look within Rancho Murrieta, you see that the level of support between Republicans and Democrats is almost identical for this measure. And so it's clear that they don't see this as a partisan measure, right? They see this as a local measure related to their community and the services that are provided by the district. So after that initial ballot test, we wanted to get into what we call the tax threshold section of the poll. Here is where we test a series of tax rates that could be associated with the measure. And we test them from high to low, from a high of $298 per year, which is also the amount that was put into that 75-word ballot statement. But we also test lower amounts, $248, $198, and $96 per year, to get understanding how, at each one of those price tags, respondents may have different opinions about their level of support for the proposal. And one of the things that sort of jumps off the slide is that there is some tax rate sensitivity related to this measure. At that high number of $298 per year, when you kind of focus voters' attention on that, support checks in at 56%. If you take $50 off that and make it $248, it doesn't move a lot, right? We're still at 57%. When it ticks below $200 a year at the $198 figure, support level jumps suddenly to 62%. And then at $96 per year, you can see you had 73% of respondents say that they would support the measure. So we do see some tax rate sensitivity, and it's always important that when you're thinking about a tax measure that you price it in an area where you feel comfortable you can achieve your necessary percentage of support. So after the tax thresholds, we get to the services and improvement section of the poll. Here is where we are going to do two things. One is we are starting to now educate this respondent more about what this proposal would accomplish. In that initial ballot test, we only had 75 words to describe the proposal, so you're kind of limited, and it's presented as a package. Here, we get to unpack that package into all the various services that can be funded. We get to be more explicit about what those services are, and in that way, we're better informing respondents about what this proposal is about. The other thing it allows us to do is to be able to identify ways you could spend the money, which of these are voters' priorities, right? Which of these sort of rise to the top of the list. And you can see that at the top of the list, deterring major crimes, including burglary and theft, you had 92% of the respondents we spoke with say that they would favor spending some of the money on that item. Continuing to provide security gate officers 24 hours a day, year-round, control community access and prevent trespassing, 91. And then reducing vandalism, graffiti, and property damage, as well as reducing trespassing by non-residents. Those were 91 and 90% respectively in terms of favorability. So what's clear from this slide here, especially, you know, from my perspective, I get to do this for different types of measures around the state for lots of public agencies, is the strength of interest in the services to be provided, especially those top four, right? Those were really the main interests of the community. Now, if the board were to choose to place this measure on an upcoming ballot, there's going to be an election cycle. During that election cycle, there will be a lot of discussion and debate within your community about this proposal. You're going to have some folks who will want this measure to pass. They will step out and advocate on behalf of this proposal to their neighbors and friends and give them reasons for why they think this is needed, and conveying positive arguments. We might also have some opposition, right? That people stand up and say, this is a bad idea, we shouldn't be doing that, doing this, and here's why. For this survey to be a reliable gauge of the feasibility of this measure, we need to be able to simulate that discussion and debate in the space of an interview. That way we know not only where are your voters on the national, where are they today, which was that initial ballot test, but what happens to their levels of support for this proposal once they've been exposed to the types of arguments pro and con that they're likely to encounter in an election cycle. So we do that by testing both positive and negative arguments. Here you see the positive arguments we tested. And one of the things that sort of steps out here is you do get those top four arguments get a lot of traction for voters, right? The number one being, you know, by keeping our community safe and secure, this measure will help protect our property values and keep Rancho Marietta a special place to live. Second one there was an argument about how one of the main reasons people move to Rancho Marietta is to be in a safe, gated community with private security. If we want to keep our community safe, we need to support this measure. So at this point in the interview, voters have heard more about this proposal than they did initially. On the one hand, we peppered them with a series of questions related to tax rates. That tends to be kind of a wet blanket on voter support for proposal because you're focusing on the price tag and not the things that it's going to actually fund. But on the other hand, we had a chance to talk in more detail about the services that will be funded by the measure. We had a chance to convey positive arguments. And so we circle back with what we call our interim ballot test. And we ask them, it takes the form of presenting them that same 75-word ballot statement. And so now that they've heard a bit more, where do they stand? And you can see at the interim ballot test, keeping in mind, again, this is set at that high $298 per parcel per year rate. We had 58% of respondents say they would support the proposal. You have 33% opposed, and you have about 9% who are unsure. So I think what's going on here, we can see from the services to be funded that your voters are very interested in those services, right? The favorability ratings are very strong. But because here we've sort of, again, tuned them into the idea this is a $298 parcel tax in the 75-word ballot statement that we're using, that there's some voters who, although they're really interested in the services, that price tag is too high for them, and that's why we're seeing 58% here. And now after this, we get to the negatives. And the idea here is to simulate what we think an opponent of this proposal would say to voters so that we expose voters to that type of sort of negative messaging that could occur during the election cycle and get an understanding of how that might impact their vote. So the number one negative argument was that property owners are already paying the district a lot of money for water, sewer, and security. The district has plenty of money. They just need to do a better job managing it. Right? And the number two there was that the tax will last forever. There's no expiration date. So we're sort of pressure testing voter support by exposing them to these negative arguments. The real question is what happens afterwards. And what you see is that support drops as it always does, but it only dropped 2 points, right, from 58 to 56%. So the negative arguments really don't have a lot of impact overall. That said, here again, this is a special tax measure that requires 2/3. And at that final ballot test, the support levels are about 10 points below that 2/3 threshold. So at this point in the survey, recognizing that perhaps there would be some voters who were uncomfortable with the $298 price tag. We also asked voters who were unsure or opposed at that final ballot test for the $298 rate, we asked them what if the tax rate were set at a lower amount, $171 per year. This is the amount needed to continue providing the current levels of security in the community and avoid having to make deep cuts to security patrols. Would you vote yes or no? So testing a lower rate but also informing the respondent that that's the rate that's needed to continue the current levels of service into the future. And what you see is that we have the 56% that were supportive at the 298, so you can assume they're also supportive at 171. And you pick up about 10 points of additional support, 2 points being definitely, 8 points being probably. If you add all that up, we get dangerously close to that two-thirds mark. We're at 66.4%. So, taking a couple other questions that were asked in the survey, one of the topics had to do with private security. And so, I'm going to go ahead and read the whole question here for everybody. So, security services are provided directly by the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District, which is a public agency. Some have suggested that security should be outsourced to a private company. In general, do you prefer that security continue to be provided by the Community Service District or that it be outsourced to a private company? So, no mention of costs here, just which is your general preference? The CSD provides security services or outsourced to a private company. You can see here that a majority of respondents, 56%, were of the opinion that security should be continued provided by the district. You had 13% who thought that security should be provided by a private security company. The rest were not sure or preferred not to answer the question. So then after that, we introduced the idea that there would be a cost differential between these two. So outsourcing to a private security company would result in estimated savings of 20% in the cost of providing services. Knowing this, would you prefer that security continue to be provided by the district or that it be outsourced to a private company? And you can see here that the introducing that cost savings shifts things a little bit. We still have 41% say that security should continue to be provided by the district. You have about 32% who think it should be outsourced to a private security company. And you still have a pretty good chunk of folks, a little over a quarter, who are not sure. So moving on, we asked folks to tell us how safe Rancho Murrieta is as a place to live. Would they say it's very safe, somewhat safe, somewhat unsafe, or very unsafe? Overall, 98% of the respondents we spoke with view the community as a safe community. Just 2% felt it was somewhat unsafe. That said, when we asked them to compare current levels of safety to 5 years ago, would they say that Rancho Murrieta is safer today, about the same, or less safe? You can see that about half of folks, that's the red slice of the pie, feel that the community is less safe today than it was 5 years ago. And we also follow that up with a question that asks, what's the public safety or security problem that they'd most like to see addressed in the community? And you can see here, about a quarter said no public safety security problems, or they couldn't think of anything specific. Those are those two green bars. But of the problems, specific problems that they'd like to see addressed, gate access and security was the top at 22%, theft and vandalism at 19%, and then a need for 24/7 patrol and presence at 12%. Okay, so what does all this mean? I'm gonna circle back first to that overarching question at the outset of this interview that I said was one of the main motivators for why you do revenue measure feasibility studies, which is to answer that basic question of, is it feasible? And meaning, if the board were to choose to place a parcel tax measure on the upcoming November 2022 ballot, doesn't have a reasonable chance of success. If the answer to that question is yes, but if structured appropriately and combined with an effective outreach and communications. So I'll elaborate on what I think that means here in a little minute. But first, let me sort of address why I think there's the possibility that a measure could be feasible. When we do these kinds of studies, we want to, you know, see a pattern of results in the survey that would suggest that a properly constructed measure could be feasible and supported on the ballot. One of those things we like to see is that voters rate improving safety and security and reducing crime as among the most important issues facing the community, and we saw that here in your community. So what this measure addresses is an issue that the community puts at the top of the list of the things they care about. This, and that sort of combination created solid natural support for the proposed measure at that initial ballot list. So right out of the gates, when we presented that 75-word ballot statement to voters, we had 60% of them say that they would support the proposal at that higher $298 rate. So that's not at two-thirds, but we do know that price tag is a big driver of how people view this measure and their willingness to support it. And so you know, the fact that at the high number we're at 60% suggests that with some, you know, pricing reductions that you could get to a two-thirds mark. We did see that of the services that could be funded by the measure, all were popular, and the positive arguments resonated. So those are the kind of pieces that we want to see in place for to be able to determine the measure to be feasible. Now, that said, the survey also pointed out some challenges. Some of these things were pointed out in the survey, and some of these things, I think, are challenges that if you step back and look at the November election cycle will be challenges. So the first is tax rate sensitivity. Right, we saw that there was a lot of movement and support for this proposal based on the price tag, and that at some of those higher tax rates, you know, at no point in the poll do we get to that two-thirds mark you would need to be successful. So that's one of the challenges. We did see also that some of the negative arguments got traction. It didn't really reduce the overall support proposal by much, but nevertheless, they did get a big attraction. And then outside of the poll, when you kind of think about the environment we're in today, and you think about what a November election cycle could look like, there's also some sort of external issues that could present challenges for a measure. So although right now we're in a what seems to be a really good sort of trend within the pandemic, we're still in the pandemic, right? There's still those concerns, and the pandemic continues to influence our lives in a variety of ways. There's inflation that's out there. There's high gas prices. We have this conflict in Ukraine that nobody knows exactly where that's going to go. And so all of these are unknowns and factors that could ultimately influence how voters view a measure on the ballot. And then finally, I didn't mention it here, but it's probably one of the bigger challenges. Anytime you're dealing with a special tax measure, you've got to hit two-thirds support. Two-thirds support measures are always what I call hand-wringers, right? And, you know, when you're involved with them, when you win those types of measures, you tend to win them by a little bit, right? You don't knock it out of the park with 80% support. It tends to be, you know, we win with 68, 69, 70. So they're always, to hit that two-thirds mark is always, a challenge. A lot of things, a lot of work has to go in. A lot of things have to go right for that to happen. And so that's, you know, another challenge to consider. Now, in terms of observations and recommendations, this is my last slide. I think the first thing to keep in mind is, you know, a poll like this is a snapshot in time. It is not a crystal ball, right? It's not looking forward to election day saying on election day you're going to get X percent. And what happens on election day isn't determined by what your poll says today. It's determined by everything that happens from this point forward. And I say that because it's really important that we need to make smart decisions about if you're going to put a measure in front of voters, what that measure looks like, right? So it's consistent with the type of measure your community has indicated they'd be willing to support. And you got to put the work in, right? You know, what we tend to find is that, you know, when voters are not informed about the decision you're asking them to make, right? They don't have the basic facts. They tend to default to a no, right? So if you're going to place a measure on the ballot, we need to make smart decisions about what it looks like, and got to do a good job communicating. So with that, I have a couple of sort of observations and recommendations. Probably the biggest sort of question that you have to solve and probably hand-wring over a bit is the price tag. You know, obviously there's a need here. You know, the more revenue you generate, the more service you can provide, but the higher that price tag, the more risk you take on for a proposal, and it's really important that it be kept affordable. So based on the polling, we saw that a $96 tax rate achieves that two-thirds support. So that's sort of a natural level of comfort zone in the community with respect to this proposal. It may be possible to hit that 171, right? But that comes with making sure that your voters understand that that's the number that would be needed to continue existing levels of service into the future, right? They don't naturally understand that now. So that's a possible achievement, but it requires a lot of extra education and communication around that topic. In terms of voters' priorities, here are the things that voters would like to see this measure focus on. So deterring major crimes, 24-hour gated security, reducing vandalism, graffiti, and property damage, reducing trespassing, fire risk, and providing security controls. In terms of communications, again, as we saw in this poll, that there's a certain level of interest and concern about security in the community, but they don't know the particulars, right? They don't know all of those facts. And so if you're going to choose to place a measure on a ballot, or are you thinking about it? You want to start expanding the conversation with the community now, start building awareness level at a higher level of understanding about what your needs are, what the financial realities are, and ultimately, you know, what's the nature of this proposal that you'd be asking them to vote on. And then should you then choose to place this on the ballot at some point, once you've made that decision, there needs to be an independent campaign, right? The district as a public agency can't advocate up or down on a measure. Any advocacy campaign would need to be private citizens with private finances organizing and paying for whatever those services are. And so, but it's important that there is that advocacy group that would be associated with the measure, because during that roughly 88-day window when you're in the election cycle, it's important that there's a voice for this measure, and it kind of helps measure some of the uncertainties that may pop up during that period. So with that, I'm going to stop sharing just so I can see the other screen again, and I welcome questions from the board.
Thank you, sir. Before I go to members of the public, I'll go to the board. So I'll just start going down. Director Butler.
Okay. I have a few things. First of all, just to be clear, no amount of property taxes and money that we get, which is 0.1%, is ever going to fix our security needs. At this point, we're using all of those property taxes. When we get new residences built, new development, that money will go to support the new requirements, the new expectations, the new things that we have to do for the community. So I don't see that, I mean, personally, I don't see that we can depend on that going forward. The other thing, one other thing, is that what I've noticed throughout the report is that most people have a specific idea about what they want from security, and that we have to get it through this tax measure or some measure that we need to spend a lot of money for. I believe there are some things within the community that could be done now with RMA's support. That would help. It would help our security officers be able to do their jobs, and it would help the community understand that the CCNRs are here for a reason, that speed limits and stop signs and things that happen out on the back reservoirs, those are all things that we could make more effort to control and to stop. And education would be part of it, but also more cameras, maybe closing the gates in the back at night, those kinds of things. So I think that I don't think that we've gone the full route of understanding what could be done to help security in this process. The other thing I'd like to see, I'm a big proponent of bullet points. You take those $3 figures and you put underneath them in bullet points every single thing that they're going to do. I think that's one of the clearest ways we could understand this. Let's see, what else did I have? If we pass that middle level, or actually if we pass any of those levels, will there ever be a time when we don't have to do it anymore? And what happens with that? How do we get out of it or be done with it? And I think that's about it. There's a couple of other things as we get into how we're going to help the community understand this. But those are two issues that I think the community really needs to understand. And I don't see that we've really actually addressed those in any of this.
Okay.
Director Janko.
Well, it's the second time that I've seen the presentation. It's very thorough. I thought it was well done. I'm more interested in public comment. A lot of the public comment at the last presentation was very good. The questions were very good. And so I'm gonna wait to comment until after I see
very
the
good
picture.
Okay, I'll open it up to the public here.
Thank you. In the rate increase notice, you say that, quote, "The district is maintaining focus on cost efficiency, and the district is working diligently to identify cost savings where possible to reduce the rate increase impact on all residential and non-residential customers." In my opinion, this is not true. The key question is, how much will private security cost? The board refuses to provide an answer. In my letter to the board, I referred to security survey question 15D, which says, quote, "A private security company would result in an estimated savings of 20% in the cost of providing services." And I asked the question, please provide your formula rationale for this estimated savings of 20%. I received a response letter from the general manager dated April 8th, where he says, quote, "The 20% was definitely yes. We have not requested a formal quote for replacement of our security department. Replacing the department has not been discussed as of today." Since the primary question was based on a guess, not a fact, it is my opinion that this survey is totally biased, invalid, and should be discarded. In September of last year, I brought to the board's attention that there was the potential of a very large cost savings by going to a private security company, and no response from the board. I proceeded to obtain formal proposals from two private security companies. They are for $1.2 million. Since the proposed budget for security is $2.5 million, this would result in a cost savings to the community of $1.3 to $1.5 million a year every year. The board's admitted savings of 20% would result in a $500,000 savings every year. So there is a potential savings somewhere between $500,000 and $1.5 million every year, or $2.5 to $7.5 million in 5 years. Please explain to me how this maintaining focus on cost efficiency. I request the board to hold, take no action on all items contained in section 6. Please give the community time to educate themselves on all the facts concerning rating increases and potential savings. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Do we have anybody else here that wants to? And again, I'm going to go to the folks in Zoom. If you want to then speak, that's fine. So
we do have one hand raised.
Well, hang on. I'm sorry. Director Butler reminded me. Director Pohl, please don't take it personal, but this is the best you've ever looked. I'm sorry. I did not turn to you as a board member. Director Pohl, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I like Randy thought this is a very good survey. I do want to hear what other people have to say, but I'm also cognizant of the fact that if we don't do something to find more funds for security, I'm worried that the services that we provide can have to be reduced. So with that, I'd like to hear from other people.
All right, and again, I apologize, that was on me, Director Pohl. Thank you, Director, for reminding me. So I don't know how you want to go bringing a question forward. So I don't know if you've got a hand raised. We'll go as they've been raised. And
I do. I have one hand raised, Laura Kenobi. If I'm not butchering your last name, yes, we can hear you. Go ahead. You have 3 minutes.
Okay, great. I just as thorough as the survey was, my concern, it was ill-timed. Since after February, we have seen a huge increase in inflation cost. We have also just realized that we have an extra 19% increase for CSD, sewer, garbage, and water. And then now to ask us for this additional money in November, I'm really concerned that the initial survey that where people were accepting of this tax increase will no longer be so, because we only have one pocketbook for all of these things. So I would ask that you maybe reconsider when you're looking at putting it on this ballot, because it costs so much money to do so. And that is really all I have to say at this time.
Thank you, Laura.
Any other hands?
No other hands.
Okay.
Tim.
Oh, yes, sir, please.
I just want to say I think I agree with her. I think if you put this survey out today with a notice that everybody's going to get that CSD increase already, how much it would change the results of this survey.
Okay, understand.
Do you want to come up here and state your name so we can have that on record, please? Okay.
It is important. I understand what you're saying. I understand the timing. We didn't, from a board's perspective, we've been working on this quite a while. And so not trying to guess the national politics and where inflation and COVID and what affects our plant operations, which is the supply chain, all that being a given, yeah, when we started this, we were going on a course. And so that'll be the decision we have tonight to continue that course of action. But we can have a little bit more conversation on that. I'm sorry, hang on one second.
I just neglected to mention this, that crime in our community is committed by the people who live in our community, I'm sorry to say. It's very little happens within the community that isn't generated by, speeding, no stop at the stop signs, some of the vandalism. We had two burglaries this year, two burglaries last year. We don't know who they were committed by. But we're not protecting ourselves from the outside. We're dealing with our residents who choose not to live by the community laws. And that's not all the residents, obviously. But there is a tendency toward that. And that's my last point about crime in the community.
Okay, do we have another hand?
Yes, I have two hands.
Sure.
The first is Nicole Williams. Nicole Williams, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. So I want to ask a question. I apologize, I joined late, so I missed the name of the gentleman that was presenting the survey findings, but my question is directed at him, if that's possible. And this may not be a question you can answer, but I'm curious. So given the 19% increase that's being proposed right now, what impact, if it can even be stated, do you anticipate that would have on the ballot come November? Because I anticipate it's going to make passing a November increase even more challenging. I also anticipate, given the timing, that the survey organization was not aware of the current increase. So I guess I'm curious for an opinion. I know it probably can't be backed in statistics, but based upon what you've seen in your line of work, what type of an impact do you think that may have?
Yeah, hi, this is Dr. Tim McCarney. So, in every measure that we work on that goes to ballot, there's always something else going on, at least one other thing, usually multiple things, right? You rarely are alone on the ballot. You're going to be sharing the ballot with other tax measures, potentially. And there's also a history of tax measures, assessments, and other things that has led up to that point, right? So voters are pretty aware that, this isn't the only issue that they'll be asked about in November, and they're aware of what they're paying currently. Obviously, to the extent that you have additional taxes levied on someone in the meantime, that isn't going to cause things to go upwards in terms of support for this for the security measure. It could have some downward impact. It's hard to say what that is without having any data in hand. It is interesting that when we tested arguments related to that taxes are already too high. We can't afford another tax increase. In the poll, although they resonated and got traction as arguments, they only actually depressed support for the proposal by 2 points, right? So difficult to say how much an actual assessment increase is gonna weigh in there without having the data.
Any other hands?
We have one more hand, and that's Crystal Matter. Go ahead, Crystal.
Couple questions. One is, Measure J funds pay for gate and patrol staffing, and it does that. Tom, you and I sat down, and you showed me how there is no delta between the Measure J funds that are collected and the payment for gate and patrol. And what causes it to go over, and Mr. Janko, I think you pointed out, and I apologize if I'm misquoting you, I think you said we are concerned about the fact we can't afford security. We can't afford security. We pay for security. And what we can't afford is the administrative overhead that was allocated. And furthermore, that allocation that was bumped up 11% was not based upon data. It was based upon information provided to those consultants to drive up those rates. And so it's the cost of the administrative overhead, not the cost of security. And then we were told that as part of these working groups, and this is the second portion of my statement, we were told as part of the working groups that we would be involved in generating the questions that were surveyed to the residents. And I was one of a few people, maybe a couple dozen people, that were involved in the working groups. And I can tell you as a matter of fact that I was not consulted on the questions that were to be asked to the community. And I specifically stated back in August that if you want to get certain results, you ask questions in a certain way. And so we weren't asked, we weren't part of that system, and that was exactly what you promised to me, Tom. And then I would say for Dr. Timothy, and I apologize, I don't want to butcher your last name, but my question to you is, how does misinformation provided to the residents related to this proposed ballot measure impact the validity of your survey results? And then finally, I just want to make a statement that we have not received the services that we pay for to date. There have been dozens and dozens, over 40 hours of unmanned patrol shifts in this year alone, and even in the last 10 days, although we have had people that can do patrol, they have not been out on patrol, and we have multiple shifts that have gone unfilled. And so I don't think we're getting the benefit of our bargain as far as the community here.
Thank you, Crystal. I have no additional hands.
Thank you. I'm not even going to attempt to answer some of those statements, so I will move on. Anybody here? Last go around, last chance. Okay. Item six. I read it before. I'll read it again, and I'm going to make it in a form of a motion. Discuss results. Security opinion poll relating to security services and tax revenue, and consider giving direction to the general manager to proceed with the actions necessary to indicate placing special tax proposal onto November 8, 2022 general election ballot. To hire Cliff Ford Moss Consulting to assist the district with the education outreach needed to inform voters upon the potential proposal, and to retain legal counsel and special tax consultant to assist the district. Do I have a second?
I'll second it. Question on the motion. We're not determining, the slide showed three or four different amounts that this tax. We're not determining that tonight. We're just saying we're going to go forward at some level.
Correct.
That is correct. And part of the proposal includes running a what's called a tracking poll, which commonly happens with these measures that are closed, and Timothy could elaborate if necessary. But just prior, maybe mid-July, we might elect to do a tracking poll where we re-poll maybe the same people, maybe different people, and get a better idea of precisely what amount of a tax would pass. The idea is we're trying to offset the property taxes funding security, and this is the way that is best designed to meet that requirement.
And as I understand that this, as I read it, we're getting the process started, but if at some point we decide it's a waste of time, we can pull back from doing this.
That is correct.
Up through when?
August 1st.
Will it cost us more money to do that?
Well, once you spend money, it's spent. If at some point, if we decide enough is enough.
And no, I mean the poll. You talked about going back to the and re-polling people.
And it's in the staff report. I estimated $10,000, and I validated that to do a tracking poll. Yes.
And then the other thing I have a question about is this Clifford Moss to provide appropriate support for the community communications on behalf of the district. Direct mailings, I understand that, online ad package. What are we talking about in terms of a video shoot and production and miscellaneous expenses?
I have Laura from Clifford Moss on the call if you'd like to hear a little bit about the services they provide.
Well, I specifically would like to know about the video shoot and production and miscellaneous expenses. I don't know that that's a necessary event.
Yes. Hi, this is Laura Prati here. Good evening, members of the board, staff, and the public. Would you like me to respond?
Yes, please.
Okay. And I just want to make sure I heard the question correctly because I'm getting a little feedback on my computer. So the question is, in terms of the services, direct mail, online surveys, online ads, the question was what would the video?
What's the video shooting? What kind of production?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so I think just on the big picture, we will help you as a district engage in a broad community conversation. So although there was great participation in the poll, it did not talk to every community member. It was a subset of the community. So we want to support you in having a robust conversation with your community before that August 1st deadline, so you as a board can make a super informed decision on whether or not you move forward with this based on everything you hear from your community. And so part of that could potentially include reaching out to community members online to ask for their feedback. And so we've seen that there's an appetite for people to take information in small bites through short video. So it would look likely to be a short video from someone in the community that is respected, talking a little bit about the needs that you have here and the potential measure that you might be placing on the ballot, and then asking for people to weigh in with an online survey.
Does that answer your question, Linda?
Yeah.
Okay.
Director Poole, do you have any comment before I ask for a vote?
Oh, yeah. I'm not personally convinced that we need to do another poll, but would the board have an opportunity to weigh in on whether or not we do it before it's actually done?
Yes. We would report back the progress of what's going on, and come back to the board with an update, probably in the June board meeting or the July board meeting.
I mean, would the board be able to weigh in whether or not we actually spend the money?
Yes.
And I'm happy with that.
No other questions of the board? I was going to say Amelia, but I'm not going to say Amelia. So Paula, would you do a roll call for the vote, please?
Who did the motion?
Tim did the motion.
I did.
You did the motion?
Okay. Randy
did.
Randy seconded.
Okay.
We had discussion.
So, President Mabee?
Aye.
Director Janko?
Aye.
Director Butler?
Aye.
Director Merchant is absent. And Director Pohl?
Aye.
Thank you.
Moving on to item 7, it's a consent calendar. Before I make a motion to accept the consent calendar as is, are there any questions from board members? Not seeing or hearing any, I make a motion to adopt a consent calendar as written. Can I have a second?
Second.
Paula, that would be you.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Like I said, I'm not Amelia, so I apologize. President Mabee?
Aye.
Director Janko?
Aye.
Director Butler?
Aye.
Director Merchant is absent. Director Pohl?
Aye.
Thank you.
Oh, I guess it's me now?
Yes, it's to you.
Sorry. item number 8, staff reports. General Manager.
Start off with my report. Thank you very much. I'm going to hit the highlights of the general manager's report this week because it's already posted. I just wanted to identify that everybody knows they received a second Prop 218 notice in the mail, probably Saturday or Monday this week of this week, Saturday of last week, Monday of this week. And the reason we needed to send out a second Prop 218 notice is because we neglected to include some legal language related to the ability to protest or to challenge the rates up to 120 days after they've been enacted. In the past, it was a 4-year statute that the law changed earlier this year, and we missed adding it to the Prop 218 notice. We also adjusted some of the language in the water rate to identify that we were going to be charging based upon how we bill. So we bill per 100 cubic feet. In the past, we published our water rate per cubic foot, so the decimal point needed to move over a couple marks in order to accurately reflect what we're going to charge for water. This creates a little bit of inconvenience on reporting back the results because we have to have a hearing to accept the rates, and the hearing has to be 45 days after the notice hit the mailboxes after the notices are mailed. And so we have scheduled a special board meeting to adopt the rates for June 1st at, I believe, 2 p.m. And I appreciate the board accommodating, allowing us to fix an error. We did not want to have to deal with the ramifications of providing incorrect information over a long period of time. It's very exciting, I'm serious, that we're going to be removing the turf here at the district's office, leaving just a little bit outside of our gazebo. We're working with the Sacramento Tree Foundation, working with Michael Fritchie and his team. We're going to be planting around 160 to 170 native seedling trees to replace the turf here at the district. And those trees will be watered with drip irrigation. And in about 3 years to 4 years, the drip irrigation is pulled and the trees will survive on their own after that. We're trying to send a message of conservation, of utilizing drip systems and reducing the amount of turf that we spread our water on during the summer. There's some discussion right now with Director Mabee and staff about moving the agendas, moving the board meetings to 4 p.m. And I believe we're going to talk about that in the May 18th meeting. And then I had a conversation with Austin at the Slough House Resource Conservation District. They're forming an advisory committee to assist the district with the implementation of their groundwater authority implementation plan. We're a part of the Slough House Resource Conservation District as relates to groundwater. And while we use no groundwater, we are part of this group because we're within their map area. And then just to let the board know, Paula O'Keefe and Michael Fritchie will be attending the GM Leadership Conference put on by CSDA in the month of June. And it's sad that I have to say that Jennifer Yee, who's been with us for just a few months, has had a change in situation and she's leaving the district. Her last day will be tomorrow. So as you can see, we've got a couple things going on in the agenda to try and, or one thing going on in the agenda to try and find a way to hire a controller that is very good at district finances and who will be able to stay with us for an extended period of time. We're really struggling with the financials because our archaic systems. We've talked about this at length, and it's also why we were purchasing the Tyler system to replace the Great Plains finance system we currently have, and that project's underway. That's all I have. Are there any questions?
Yeah.
Linda?
You didn't say anything about camera program update?
Well, I can. Right now, we're working with our camera vendor to put together a package that we can present to the Improvement and Finance Committee meeting in May to outline how we're going to deploy cameras throughout the district next fiscal year. There's capital improvement funds within the security reserve that we want to apply towards increasing our force capability with, and I lost the word again, force multiplier. We've had a great amount of success with our cameras, and Kelly's every month is reporting back how our staff have been able to solve crimes, identify problems with the cameras. And my main focus is that we have cameras at our assets, our lift stations, our critical junctures of equipment, because, like you say, the stuff that's going on here is happening from the people who live here. And during the summer, we tend to have a little bit more vandalism, and we cannot afford to have our critical infrastructure damaged and harm what we do here, provide water, sewer, and security services.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Director Janko or Pohl, any questions on the GM's report?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Thank you, Mark. Next up will be administration financial report, which will be Paula. Before you start, I'm just going to hopefully ask yes or no questions. Do we follow the GAAP when we do our auditing and our budgeting and those things?
Yes.
Do we, with specifically like to PERS, do we follow the GASPs?
GASPs, yes.
Every year, not necessarily timely, we have our financials reconciled, audited, and accounted for?
Yes, and very thoroughly at that.
Okay. I guess this will be a question for you, Tom. Historically, when we use consultants at any level, whether it's through plan operations or the gentleman we had tonight, they ask us for information. We provide them the information, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Mr. Shanahan, from your very limited exposure of this highly fine-tuned organization, is it a common statement to say that we provide the wrong information to consultants on a regular basis?
You frame that, I think, as a double negative. That's why I'm pausing.
Right. But, and I did on purpose.
Yes. No, I don't believe that's a common statement. And it's also incumbent on the part of the consultant. A good quality consultant will work closely with its client to make sure you're getting good information, and to follow up with the client if there's any uncertainty about that information, to confirm it and to clear up any ambiguities there may be. So, and as a consultant to this district, I've never had any issue or challenge getting good quality information from staff or, when needed, from the board.
Thank you. Paula, please.
I do have a hand raised. Would you like to wait until the end of the reports to address that?
Yeah, we have staff reports to get through.
Okay, perfect.
I'm going to share my screen with the Zoomers. Just to kind of quickly go through the administration financial update, the April 5th committee, we discussed the 2021 annual audit and the water shutoffs. We've had some significant improvements in those outstanding bills, and we'll talk about that a little bit later moving forward. Moving down to the 21-22 audit, we met with Richardson CPAs this past week and discovered significant adjustments that needed correction before the final draft can be issued. So we are working to bring on additional accounting staff temporarily to assist with completing the necessary adjustments. Essentially, we currently have a single accountant, we have an accounting manager, and we have a retired annuitant. And our retired annuitant has been heavily involved in the audit process, as well as our accountant. And our accounting, our retired annuitant accountant is running out of hours. She has about 2 weeks left that she's with us, and we need that additional support to get that audit completed and wrapped up. So we're looking to bring on additional temporary staffing to assist with that. Reserve balances as of March 31st. Again, beginning balances are not finalized for fiscal year 2021-22, as 2021 has not closed. We'll skip through that fairly quickly. And then to the utility billing again, we have initiated the first round of water shutoff notifications during the month of March. Those customers that we spent time with the outreach program, they brought their accounts current or they entered into a payment agreement, and it allowed us to move on to the next round of 20 outstanding accounts. We currently have 46 residents who are 90 days past due, and this is down significantly than when we started in January, actually evaluating the number of past due accounts and really looking at those numbers of who had the highest amount that was outstanding. Again, we want to make sure that everyone is aware that we do have that payment agreement option. Please bring your accounts current. We appreciate the residents who've been proactive and recognize that they needed to bring their accounts current and have come in on their own and contacted us and have worked with us to bring those accounts current. For the aging report, this is where the numbers really are. We went from 132 residents in February that were past due 60 days down to 101 residents. So there's been a significant change in those numbers. And we went from 72 in February down to 46, 90 days past due. So we've had some proactive residents, and we've had some residents who have cooperated and brought their accounts current either through the payment plan or bringing those numbers of balance down to zero. And so now our outstanding balances have dropped significantly. We're down to 90 days past due is down to $31,000, roughly, approximately, down from 112 in February. So it has made a significant improvement in all of our outstanding balances.
Just Paul, I think this is accurate. We had no choice. The governor said, stop turning people's water off.
Correct. Right. He issued the moratorium due to the emergency orders of COVID.
Yes.
And a lot of things were stopped because of that. And,
right.
You know, the evictions were also stopped as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we were basically providing water for residents who were either unable to pay due to COVID or chose not to pay for varying reasons.
Right, right.
But yes, we were not able to shut off water
and
during that time.
And that was not our choice necessarily.
Correct,
right.
Correct.
People have asked that question.
And that's it for the rest of my report. Is there any questions at this time?
Anything from reserve balances from February or from July of last year through today? Flat. Is that typical?
Yes.
So we're not gaining, in other words, we're not gaining on it by what we're doing right now.
Correct.
Including whatever was left at the end of the... No, that wouldn't be true.
Okay. We haven't wrapped up the year-end balances for 2021, so these beginning balances will change. The activity that you're seeing in here is primarily due to the collection of the replacement reserves through the utility billing piece, but outside of that, there should be very little transactional data.
Thank you.
You're good on that?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Security. Kelly, please.
Thank you. For the month of March 2022, CSD staffing, we currently have one part-time gate position opening, and we are recruiting for that position. We continue to use two ABA security officers to help with our shortages. Patrol uncovered for the month of March was about 20 hours. However, my next reporting to the board will be significantly higher, and this was because of a last-minute resignation. We had our nighttime officer go out on maternity leave, and we've been kind of short on the nighttime. But we hopefully he'll be back soon, and with our hiring of our replacing of the gate officer that quit last minute, we'll have her training done in about 3 weeks, and hopefully we'll be back to where we were. Next issue, ABDI, sorry, ABDI software upgrade has been fully completed. We are in daily communication with the people in Florida, ABDI who works in Florida, and we're working out the bugs. And every day there's a little something we're tweaking, but overall it's been a success. The fast pass at the South Gate and North Gate, we've got the licenses for them, and we're waiting for our in-house leap ahead to come out there and do the final act for the fast pass systems. So within a matter of a week, we'll have a fast pass at both gates, South and North. Toyota pickup truck is fully operational. It's been out in the community. We are still waiting for an antenna, but everything else works. Once the antenna comes in, I think it's coming in from overseas, we will add that to our truck, and it'll be, again, it's fully operational now, but the antenna will enhance our radio communications. Our LiDAR we talked about before has arrived, and the representative came out on Monday, and he trained all of us on the new LiDAR, and we actually went out and for use last night, and we got our first two citations at night. So hopefully this will be an educational campaign for the community, especially for nighttime speeding with the 4th of July and the kids being out for school. It will be an education campaign for the citizens to slow down, especially at night. So we have that, and we are currently using it. We invited RMA. They came over and received the training as well with us, and we are coordinating with them on strategies of how to and when to ask, what kind of enforcement to do for parking as well as speeding. And now there's approximately, and stop signs as well, right? We have at least three LiDARs now that could be out at one time. So we'll be working together with RMA with that. The safety center repairs, we have received three estimates, and I'm in the process right now of working with the general manager to hopefully to submit something very soon so we can get those repairs underway. Our training, Officer Gabriel went to 832 school, he graduated. And our next person to go to 832 is Officer Anderson. He's a gate officer that will be transitioning to a patrol. And we're looking forward to have him complete his training by the end of August. We ordered black barcodes from ABDI. We've submitted our payment, and we're just waiting for him to arrive. And all of our stickers now will be completely black, and hopefully it'll be a little bit more pleasing while putting on cars, and won't be as showy, and more people will purchase them. So we are waiting on that. Moving on to RMA issues, I attended the monthly compliance meeting, and we talked about enforcement. You'll see later with the report that I think we issued about 20 speeding citations, and like I said, we are working with them and coordinating when we go out. The fact that we can go out at night now, excuse me.
Don't get choked up over it.
It's a little emotional getting out at night now, so I'm so excited.
LiDAR gun, and wow.
And it works at night, in the middle of the night.
Right? No, this is.
So very excited here.
Can we let that? Right.
So with compliance meeting, and we also, as per direction of Director Mabee, we will be volunteering our services to help them with their educational campaign on the Woodbridge in regards to speeding and underage driving of golf carts. So as soon as they have a plan together, our resources are there to help them when they let us know. So we let them know that as well. I'm sorry, question?
On the RMA topics, juvenile delinquency, driving, underage golf carts, citation, kickbacks, what is that?
On the citation kickbacks, we write our citations and they go to RMA for approval. A lot of times they don't get processed, So we wanted to know why aren't they being processed.
Right.
Is it something we're doing wrong? Maybe we look at the date wrong, or we've cited to someone who can't get a citation. So we keep track of that so we can see what we're doing wrong and what issues we are. Mostly for training and why did we write the citation? Why was it kicked back? That information, so it kind of helps us improve our citations.
Okay, the other thing is on a lot of these, or several of these issues, bridge educational campaign, what is RMA going to do about that? They have 210 miles per hour on that bridge.
And that's what we're waiting for. Our direction from Director Mabee was that to help them with whatever they're going to do. And I asked them that on the compliance meeting, and they said that they are still in the process of planning. However, we have our resources to help them. And if they're going to do a flyer campaign where they stand on both ends of the bridges and give a flyer out that says, hey, slow down, or this is what the rules are going to be, I think it's going to be an educational campaign like that. And we will help them when they decide what they're going to do.
Okay, thank you.
So enforcement. One of the other issues I talked about with our RMA, specifically the general manager, is the vandalisms at the bathrooms. They're out of control already, and we're working some tactics with them to help them solve them. They have two compliance officers during the day. We have 24-hour coverage that we give them, but we can't be everywhere at once. So some of the tactics we're using is locking the bathrooms early when there's a big group there, doing extra patrol. We've shared our cameras with them. Whenever they're doing an investigation, we look at their cameras. They'll come to our gates, and we help them as well. I believe there's been at least three incidences where they've identified the juveniles, and they've done contacted their parents, and they're going through the process of finding them and getting restitution for the damages. But at least three times, our cameras and theirs were able to see them, identify them, and contact the parents. So it's been a success rate with those cameras.
Thank you.
So happy to report with that. St. Vincent Church, one of our officers was stuck in their trail next to their church, and they asked for us to come out and repair the damages in the driveway, and our Mike staff went out there and repaired that, so they're very happy with us, and we went and did that. I also attended the Fire Safety Council. They seem to be, again, focused on having a master evacuation plan for the citizens of Rancho Marietta in the event of a fire, flood, natural disasters. One of the things that Betty Ferraro has contacted myself and Tom about is she wants to meet with us and specifically see how we can electrify the gates for an evacuation and what databases we can offer for senior citizens that may need extra help evacuating. So she is on the calendar with us, I think, next month, to talk about that.
Yeah, and I want to be clear, electrifying the gates is...
Oh, I may rephrase that.
It means creating automatic gates.
Right. So she says electrifying.
So they can be opened by a dispatcher at the Metro Fire Dispatch Center.
If I could be looped into that, just my humble experience with our communication center, which is Sacramento Regional Fire EMS Communication Center, we don't need to task them when a community is evacuating opening the gate. We have enough staff 24/7 to have what we call in the fire service a master key, and that's a bolt cutter. So there's a ton of options. Those funds that it would take to staff that, or not staff it, but to implement that, it can be done simply if it wants to be purchased off the 800 megahertz system that we have. So there's a lot of options. What that group is asking for is not practical in today's function, but I don't want to take up today's time. If you could loop me in on that.
Very good, understood. And moving on, I talked about a little bit already the citations that were written for the month of March. And again, we're going to be working with the RMA and coordinating our attacks with that, our strategy with the citations. The biggest case breakdowns, again, was extra patrol. And this is due when to the vandalism suspects, to the burglaries we've had in the plaza area and the airport. We continually shoo away, if you will, the transients that are sleeping behind the backyard. Restaurants behind the airport, and that's an ongoing thing we see at night is transients and vehicles sleeping there, so that we continue to do extra patrol and cover that when necessarily. And we're going moving on to if there's no other questions, we'll move on to the incidents of note. On March 1st and the 2nd, 2022, there was a burglary between 0200 hours and 1500 hours in the north. CSD responded to an address on Anilla Way. A citizen reported that an unknown person broke into their home and removed a toolbox with various tools. The point of entry was the side garage door that was used to enter the house. The total loss to the victim was approximately $500. The sheriff's department was notified and there was a report generated. On March 21st, 2022, we have a stolen / recovered trailer at approximately 0850 hours. This is outside the gates. CSD security was contacted by the sheriff's department and advised that a stolen trailer was located behind the plaza and was being covered by the CHP. The victim, the owner, had a tracker in the trailer, and he was able to track it. And through GPS, the CHP released the stolen trailer minus the tractor that was inside the trailer to the victim. On March 23rd, 2022, we had a stolen vehicle at 1850 hours. This was at the Chevron station outside the gates. CSD security staff was informed by the victim that she had her motorcycle was stolen, and that the suspect, a Rancho Murrieta juvenile, met the victim at the gas station to purchase the victim's motorcycle. The victim agreed to let the suspect test drive the bike. The suspect rode the motorcycle back into the north center and did not return the motorcycle. CSD security cameras captured the incident and were able to ID the suspect. The CHP was notified and they conducted a follow-up investigation. The bicycle was returned to the owner and the suspect was issued a citation. And this is a good example of this juvenile was playing basketball for a couple hours adjacent to the north gate where the gazebo is. And after the victim informed us of what had happened, our staff looked at the cameras and we were able to identify the juvenile driving away the motorcycle and back to his house. But we were able to see that he was playing basketball and that his father had dropped him off a few hours earlier. Well, then we were able to get his license plate, and with that we were able to do the follow-up and give that to the CHP, and they did their follow-up about 5 days later, but the bike was still there and they returned it. But that's a perfect example of how we can help law enforcement, and it wasn't real time, but as close as we can be. It took about 5 days, but still that's a perfect example of how we help, and those cameras are really doing a great job for us. And with that, there's no other questions, that's all I have.
Perfect, thank you. Your report never gets old, so keep it coming. Michael,
yeah.
Utilities, please.
Okay, I'll try to keep this as brief as possible.
Excuse me?
I think we have a comment.
Can somebody identify?
Well, we're not taking comments until after the report.
Yeah, until after I get after this one.
Correct.
Continue on.
Okay. Just an update on our SB 170 funded projects. Water treatment plant, sodium hypochlorite conversion. We have contracted with HDR to start the design for the chlorine gas to sodium hypochlorite conversion. We're hoping to, we have awarded the contract and we want to initiate this in time. Hopefully we get the design done in time so we can put it out and complete this prior to next spring. We want to try to do the construction work in the winter. For the recycled water disinfection project, we received, and the improvements committee got a copy of the draft presentation of the UV versus hypochlorite analysis for the district recycled water disinfection system. Looking at the analysis, the capital costs for the hypochlorite system versus the UV system were estimated at $1.2 million and $2.3 million respectively. The 20-year life cycle costs for the hypochlorite system versus the UV system were estimated at 2.5 and 3.9 million respectively. So the staff intends to move forward with the hypochlorite system upgrade just because of the large difference in cost. During that same meeting, we did discuss with West Yost & Associates, we were originally going to look at the feasibility of providing recycled water is indirect potable reuse and harvesting rainwater to the wastewater treatment facility for additional recycled water. We're not going to be moving towards indirect potable reuse as at this point in time we don't have the economy of scale, and it's such a new thing. The cost would be very, very, very prohibitive to do the indirect potable reuse at this point.
When would we get there at build up? If we added another...
No.
Answer
yeah.
my question.
Like, there's two... Yeah. San Diego's barely doing it, so...
Okay.
Yeah, we're
answer
not going to do
question.
It. But I would like to move forward with the... taking a look at harvesting rainwater and running it through a treatment plant and providing more recycled water every summer, which will, in turn, help reduce potable water consumption costs. So we'll be taking a look at that.
Okay.
For the ground lease safety improvements, we are in the process of contracting with HDR to perform the preliminary design analysis prior to moving forward with the design RFP. For water storage and delivery, we've continued diverting water from the Consumnes River, and at the end of the month, March, we had pumped a cumulative total of 522 million gallons since the beginning of the pumping season. Currently, all three reservoirs are full. We have the stop logs installed in all three reservoirs as of the 15th. Currently, we have two 125 horsepower pumps pumping into Claro to try to fill our reservoirs as high as we can.
What's our cutoff date to stop?
I think it's the end of May. We're not supposed to be pumping in June.
Yeah, is that, thank you.
Currently with the rains, our flow at Michigan Bar is 800 CFS. So, yeah,
fine.
As of March 31st, 2022, the total water stored between Clemencia, Chesbrough, and Claro totaled 4,626 acre feet, about 1.6% more than we were last year. Wastewater storage, however, is 38% higher than we had last year, which is great. We're up to 350 acre feet as of the end of the month. So we'll have more recycled water available. We have initiated a bathymetric survey that will allow the district to update the stage storage curve for the Claro Reservoir. So basically, we're going to be surveying the bottom of Claro Reservoir to update that so we can have a, you know, updated stage storage curve so we actually know how much we're really storing. It'll be more accurate.
So we have three reservoirs. Maybe next year or the following, next year or the following.
Sure, yep. Sure. Claro is the big one.
Right.
A hydrology report, as of April 1st, California, as you know, is experiencing extreme dryness, even though it has been raining lately. Low precipitation combined with higher temperatures resulting in what's going to probably be our third consecutive year of drought. And so it'll be interesting to see what these numbers come out to after these rains, but it's still not looking super good. As of April 1st, the current water year precipitation was 71% of average. The statewide mean temperature was 106% of average, and the statewide seasonal snowpack was 38% of average. Executive Order N-722 requires urban water suppliers to adopt a shortage response plan of up to 20% of their production. While the district is not currently an urban water supplier by definition of our number of connections, it may support drought response on a voluntary level by encouraging residents' actions to help conserve. You know, it's only going to be probably one or two more developments before we are an urban water supplier, and there'll be a whole list of additional things that we need to report on and things that we'll be subject to. There's also recently got some information today on the new SB 552 regs. They're going to require an abridged water shortage contingency plan by July 1st, 2023. The new parts of the regulations are we're going to be required to report water supply condition information annually and report our water demand annually. And so they're going to be getting us information on what they want to see and how that report should be.
Okay.
And I think they're going to get us most of that information by next December. And these things are going to be due July 1st, 2023. So for water consumption, as of the 31st of March, our cumulative potable water production for the year totaled 80.19 million gallons, about almost 5.5 million gallons higher during the same use period in 2021. And once again, it's possible that unprecedented mild February and March weather may have led to some early additional outdoor water use. We evaluated the potable water for 2021 and 2022 against the 15% reduction of 2020 that was the governor of California's request. According to the table, when we look at the cumulative production, it's currently higher than the 15% of the 2020 request. Looking at the gallons per capita per day, if you can see the attached figure, I'm sorry, it's not up on the screen. Comparing our use in 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, and 2022, and the 15% reduction of 2020 that was requested, while January 2022 use was within the requested reduction of gallons per capita per day, the graph shows that residents will likely have to cut water substantially to comply with the governor's request. But note that when this request was originally issued in July of 2021, there's what appears to have been a previous effort to reduce consumption. So our 2020 data was
correct.
Already lower.
Right.
I think Rancho Maria in general do a pretty decent job conserving water. And we could do better. We could always do better. And that's something that we need to talk about as community, where do we want to go with this? You know, we're meeting the letter of the law, but do we want to conserve more?
Well, if we hold the same volume through the rest of the year, we meet it.
Yeah,
oh, wait,
yeah.
The chart doesn't show that. Never mind.
I mean, I'll do all I can to stretch our water use and come up with new and inventive ways to use more recycled water, but ultimately, we need to take a
right.
look at what can we do.
Storage?
Yeah, I mean, we could build more storage. There's a number of things we're already doing. We already have incentives for toilet rebates, for changing out the old clunker toilet, uses too much water. Hot water, this is my favorite hot water recirculating pump. I had that in my old house, loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Water reducing pressure valve, weather-based irrigation controllers. We have a drip system rebate and a rotator head sprinkler program. So we are doing some things, and those things are available. Maybe we need to get that information back out to our clientele, say, hey, these things are available. All right, so, moving on to infrastructure. Wanted to update you on the state of our lift stations. Crest Lift Station, and that's located at the end of Bermuda Court. We were having some issues with that lift station. Staff changed out the floats and transducers and appears to have corrected the controls problem at that lift station. We're also in the process of being proactive and ordering a spare pump, so we have that on the shelf. And we'll have a little discussion about lift station 6A. Lift station 6A, this station, you know, was probably put in when the when those houses were put in, and it's reached the end of its design life. We lost one of the pumps, and every lift station is designed to be a duplex, a two-pump system. One pump should be able to take care of everything that comes in, so if that one dies, the other pump takes over, and so you always want that redundancy. Well, we lost one of the pumps, and we immediately ordered, you know, a replacement pump. Unfortunately, it's 12 to 14 weeks out. Now, while we were waiting for this pump, we had electrical issues, and so the existing pump was not being controlled properly, and we had to rewire the entire lift station. And while that was happening, we didn't have any pumps. And as you may have heard, we were trucking sewage the last week and a half. And my operations staff worked very diligently along with the utility staff to make sure that that section of the neighborhood was served. There was no spills. It was very close to Bass Lake. It was it could have been a pretty bad situation. We had to call in a emergency pumping scenario because we weren't able to keep up with our little pump. And so we called them in on Saturday. They pumped the lift station down to the point where we were able to keep up with our small vector. So that has, the wiring has been done. We have one pump working. We've got another pump coming in, and we're going to get a second pump for the shelf. 6A is one of the various lift stations that you'll see when we do the CIP presentation that needs some attention. And so that's what we want to do. That's part of the reason why we're spending money in reserves, is so we can keep this aging infrastructure in good working order and not have to spend additional money on an emergency operations.
That's so why we're trying to get you some reserve money.
Yes.
Well, so to be clear, there's about 20 homes in Unit 6, or what is better known as the Fairways. And this is over the crest as you go, start going downhill towards hole number 4 on the north. And those 20 homes, that's where their sewage goes, or their black water goes. And as you can see from the picture here in the middle on the right, this tank, which is about 40 feet deep, Michael?
No, it's probably what, 20, 25?
22 feet deep.
Okay. 22.
22 feet deep, and the wastewater fills up, and then it hits a float, and then the pumps turn on and empty it. Well, when those pumps stop, it'll just fill up, and it would overflow. And as you can see, you know, for those who play golf, you can see it's right there. There's the fourth green or the fifth green. It's fifth green, right?
And the proximity to Bass Lake is also troubling.
And then if you go down, you look, it's the water would drain into Bass Lake, which is
it's game over.
Immense amount of problems with the Environmental Protection Agency. Had Travis and his staff not collected, you know, fixed it and caught it and made sure we handled it. So
kudos to staff for making sure that that didn't fail. But understand that this is reserve money we spend, and it's another thing that can fail, and we need to catch up. We don't need to be putting out fires. We need to be properly maintaining this equipment. And, you know, what Michael will tell you as he talks about the CIPs, it's critical that we not have a spill of raw sewage anywhere.
And you know, these staff emergency callouts are a common issue. And I'm hoping to clean things up to where, you know, they get called out once in a while. It's always more expensive when it's an emergency, as we know. So we're back in working order, and we are going to work with the country club to make them whole as far as any of the scarring that's happened on the way to that lift station.
Actually, we had a meeting with their GM, and he basically stated it was no different than after Randy Janko plays around with golf. So we're fine. No.
I got a free drop from that fence last night.
Okay, moving on to the wastewater treatment facility. We are hoping that we can get the tertiary plant up and running for the first week of May, so we can start delivering recycled water to the country club. We have been in communication with the country club, letting them know that we're looking at that. We have to reinstall both of the tertiary pumps that were recently rebuilt. One of the pump heads came back, it was cracked and it couldn't be fixed, so we had to get a replacement pump head. And those are now out for powder coating, and we should have those back hopefully in a few weeks and up and running. For the Rio Oso pump replacement update, I informed the board that we were all ready to do the replacement for the pressure pumps, and we did not have the new flex coupler reducers. We paused that project. And it's given us some additional time to think, oh, well, maybe we need to replace one of the gate valves as well. We have a gate valve that doesn't seal, and there's another that's in bad condition. So we're still waiting on quotes, getting back for those gate valves. Both Travis and I are getting nervous about that pump replacement project. Once we get that information, we're going to move forward. And then next year, we're going to take a look at the efficiency of that pump station and take a look at potential configurations that will give us more efficiency, like a third pump that would run most of the time, that would be sized for the actual system instead of, because right now we're basically operating with two fire pumps. Right. So we'll take a look at that. I'm still looking at the history of why we chose to do what we did.
So Michael, to that point, you have all the authorization to get this project done, right?
Yes.
It's not coming back to us.
No, I don't believe so. There'll be some additional costs with the valves, potentially.
We're going to need to explain it to the improvements committee.
Yeah.
We'll probably do a field trip to explain all
idea.
That was there. And
well, I don't want you now have to wait for a board meeting to come back to get approval.
No.
If it's within your authorization, or we need to move contingently, I'd rather do that than you identify something you want to get
loud and clear. Loud and
okay.
clear.
Thank you.
All right. So to the water treatment facility. Water treatment facility one was brought back online earlier in April, and the first of the rebuilt back pulse pumps is expected, I believe, is installed. Isn't that correct, Travis?
No.
We're still waiting on it. Okay, we're still 2 weeks out on that. For the utility crew report, we had a total of 32 utility star work orders completed, a total of 9 811 USA locates. Crew responded to 3 homeowner calls for water-related problems. A total of 4 water leaks were repaired. 2 were service line replacements. 1 was a fire hydrant replacement. Continued exercising water valves and flushing. Replaced 3 water meters. Removed sludge from one of the water plant drying beds. I'd like to take this time to, you know, I appreciate all my staff, but I want to especially recognize Gabriel DeVault for the good work and service orientation for a recent resident water break issue. And this is, I'm quoting Bob Granzi. Recently, I had a main line break on my property. I inquired with your organization, thinking it might be a CSD issue. Gabriel responded and assisted the best he could. I had to have an entire new line installed into my home. Gabriel was tremendous in his advice and his assistance, and he's a valuable employee of CSD. And you know, this is typical of the feedback that we do receive from our employees, and I'm very proud of the work that we do and the service orientation that we have.
Very good.
Okay, so Laguna Joaquin, as you know, we have the joint CSD RMA funded midge treatments, and we got some early testing back that indicates a substantial decrease in midge larvae over the previous year, so it looks like things are moving in the right direction. Well, you're laughing. Are you seeing midges out there?
No.
Okay,
no,
good.
If I don't hear the two words midge fly put together again, I'll be fine.
Okay. Riverview, continuing with the Phase 1B utility installation, sewer line, storm drain. Retreats, as you know, grading has been going on. There's been a ton of truck traffic. Now, the grading import will probably continue towards the end of this week and next week. Currently, the developer is running two street sweepers. When we take a look at the next development, I think we're going to require more substantial tire wash scenario.
So to that point, today, Tom and I had a meeting with RMA board president and GM and the country club GM and board president fill-in. One of the requirements that RMA has in their MBA agreement is a truck wash station. The developer, for whatever reason, didn't either recognize that, the county didn't follow up on that, so the GM and I had some discussion. That is an RMA requirement.
Okay.
So between you putting it in as a district, RMA, and RMA has made contact with the county to state, hey, here are conditions that need to be met before you get the approval. So thank you. We'll keep that course going, but there is a document, and it is an RMA process that just was not adhered to.
Well, that makes it a lot easier to require that when they put forth their plans for approval.
Okay, perfect.
Taco Bell, building construction has continued, and if they can find people to work there, it will be open in May of this year, it looks like. Most utilities have been tied in, and the developer is working on extending a fire service line on the property in the Circle K and Shell.
Michael?
Yeah.
Is that Circle K like two lots over near Oakville, I guess, or Oak, whatever it is?
I don't recall the name of the road. It's like right when you turn in to go to the gardens.
It's the end.
Yeah.
That's the correct one. Any questions on the utility report?
Board members?
Michael, what do you attribute the increase in recycled water to?
Oh, it's influent infiltration. That big rain event that we had in October and some of the subsequent rain events.
So you are capturing rainwater already?
Yes, we are.
There you go.
That's I&I. I want more. I want more.
Director Martin, any questions? Staff?
No, this is Martin. None for me.
Okay. Paula, we had a question.
Yes, we have James Q. Public with a hand raised.
Okay.
Mr. Public, you have 3 minutes.
This is a question for you, Paula, back on the aging report. Up until this month, there was one resident that owed something to the tune of, I don't know, it was $45,000, and it's not on the report anymore. So has that money been collected?
Yes, it has.
Okay, thank you.
All right, moving on to item 9, review district meeting dates, times. Unless any of the board members have any questions or issues, I would state that we meet up with, I was going to say Paula, but Amelia, if there needs to be any changes. Moving on to correspondence number 10. The correspondence is in the board packet. I would like to address one of them. It's from a Jerry Pasek I know the gentleman lives in the community. In his letter that's in the packet, and I would truly implore everybody to read it, there's only a couple of items I take note of about lacking any efficiency that we have in the organization. But when you look at his history of being on this board and them, quote, no catastrophic disasters, so they used annual revenues versus expenses for surplus. That's a polite way of saying they did nothing for reserves. And so for decade plus, as this board member pointed out, they just never really worried about it. And if they had an emergency, the fallback was to just go to a bond and get it taken care of at that point. Probably the thing that I just don't understand why he put it in here, and I'll read it. A rate increase of the magnitude proposed is likely to result in major community objection and change in the current board members who choose to run for election this fall. I'll speak for myself. I'm not here to get reelected. I'm here to just do a task. To that end, I know that two directors, specifically Martin and Janko, that was their platform they ran on, was we have no reserves. So this board has been very consistent, unlike prior boards. We're not going to move it down the road for somebody else to pay for what should have been a few bucks at a time. The best example I can give folks, if we would have gotten this $450,000 that we're paying into security now addressed when it started, we would have been putting money into reserves. And it would have been a couple bucks at a time and not to the point where we're at. With that, that's the correspondence. Item number 11, this is public comments. This is different on the public comment from before. This is any item that a community member has, they shall have 3 minutes unless they're speaking for an organization. Paula, do you have any hands raised?
I have no hands.
What about that one that says Gail, her hand's raised, isn't it up there? Oh. Not seeing any, moving on. Item number 12, consider authorization for the general manager to enter into agreement, Robert Half Technologies for recruitment services. Is it going to go to Paula on this one?
Yes.
Please.
Yes, please. Thank you. So basically, touched on this a little bit earlier in the staff report, and then Tom also mentioned in his GM report that our county manager had some situational changes and required her to be closer to home. And so her last day is Friday, and we have so many things going on in the accounting realm right now that we really need to bring on staff immediately. And one of the ways that we can do this is by going through a recruiter to engage in recruitment services. And I've worked with Robert Half in the past, and they saw the positions posted on the website and on Deed last Monday. As soon as we were notified, I put the ball, got the ball rolling. I spoke with Robert Half a couple of days ago, and basically this contract is, or this agreement is, to do recruitment services for both the accounting manager and the accountant position. We currently only have one vacancy, which would be the accounting manager, but we're looking to potentially underfill that position with an accountant. If we're not seeing an accounting manager position immediately, and then that way between the two accountants, that might be a promotional opportunity for them down the road. Essentially, I want to widen the candidate pool is what I'm trying to do. Get someone in here immediately or as soon as possible to fill that gap that Jennifer is leaving. Essentially, the agreement is only payable upon a successful candidate hire, and is amounted to 25% of the first year salary of the successful candidate. So at this time, the total cost is unknown, dependent on which position we hire in, whether it's the accountant or the accounting manager. It could be anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000, depending upon the first year salary of that particular position. Additionally, the cost to recruit is going to be offset by the vacancy that we have with the AP technician. That position has been vacant since January. We intend to keep that vacant until June 30th and start the hiring process after we end this fiscal year for that particular position. So we do have some salary savings that we can absorb that recruitment cost as well. And so basically, if approved, I'm going to give Robert half the go-ahead tomorrow to start the services and get moving on that.
Can board, any questions? Director Martin?
No, it sounds like it's a necessary thing to do. We need people in accounting, and we need to get the new accounting system going.
So two things, Paula. You and I have had conversation on this, but refresh me. These two full-time equivalents are authorized budgeted positions already, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. You answered the question on offset of costs. No other questions. I'm going to make a motion. Consider authorizing the general manager to enter into an agreement with Robert Half Technologies for recruitment services. Can I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Roll call. President Mabee?
Aye.
Director Jenko?
Aye.
Director Butler?
Aye.
Director Pohl?
Aye.
Thank you.
Item 13, consider approval contract California CAD Solutions in the amount of $80,050 plus 15% contingency, not to exceed $92,58. For continued building of the district's global information system, that's GIS, Director Jenko, over the current and next fiscal year. Tom?
I'm going to let Michael handle this one. He's been working with CalCAD over the past couple months.
Yeah, so this is to increase the capability of our existing system that was originally built. Like I had mentioned earlier, I was very thankful when I came here that Tom had already started this process of GIS because I understand how important GIS is to an organization. It's really just a really nice one-stop shop and a hub for collecting information. It's people that can access it outside of the office. They can access it on the street and in the office. It's a good planning tool. So right now, currently, we have water lines, sewer lines, lift stations, drainage structures, easements, property information, ratepayer, late payments, tracking, 218 protest letters. We want to expand the information, getting more detail on the infrastructure that we have. Yes, we have a pipe, but how deep is it? What's the pipe made out of? What's the condition of the pipe? So as we move forward with our condition assessment, we're going to link that to that geographically driven database. I've hired a temp to assist us in building up the database with all those interesting details that we want to know, help us better track our infrastructure. We're looking at connecting with our global search integration, with our computer maintenance management system integration, so when we have our work order process, it gets tied into GIS as well. User account tracking. Someday we might have the ability to have people or ourselves view real-time water usage at our storm drain system layer, security camera feeds, all the click. And then the other thing that I believe Tom probably talked about today at the joint meeting was making this available to both RMA and the Country Club if they want to add their own layers. We all benefit when we have information what other people have in the ground, and so I strongly encourage the board to move forward with this second phase of this GIS contract.
All right. I'm going to make a motion. Consider approval of contract for California CAD Solutions in the amount of $80,050 plus 15% contingency, not to exceed $92,58. Continue to build out the GIS with the current and next fiscal year. Can I have a second?
Second.
Roll call. President Mabee?
Aye.
Director Jenko?
Aye.
Director Butler?
Yes.
Director Pohl?
How come we didn't get to discuss this?
Well, we can discuss it now. I'm sorry. Your question, Martin.
I'm actually in favor of this GIS system, but at the same time, I'm concerned about the overruns we already have with the current budget. So I'm wondering if there's some way to put some of it into next year's budget.
This is Tom. Director Paul, the funding for the GIS upgrades are coming equally out of the capital improvement reserves for water, sewer, drainage, and security. The GIS system benefits the entire district infrastructure as well as district operations, and those are where the funds are coming from. This is a much-needed modernization of how the district manages just the plethora of information and material and activities that we have going on here. So that's where we're paying for this out of.
Okay, you did answer the question. My mistake.
So it's, that's not, what confused me was the beginning paragraphs of this thing is he wants to change the budget. But you're talking about the budgets is not those improvement funds you're talking about.
So
that's what got me confused. The very first paragraph of this thing says he wants to change the budget.
I'll try to answer. Let me try to read what you're talking about. Give me a second. You're talking about the very first sentence where.
Go to
the recommended action.
It's the very first paragraph of where.
So what we talk about is staff recommends the board approve proposed contracts with CalCAD in the estimated amount of $80,050 with contingency to total out to $92,058 over the current and next fiscal year to build the GIS system. And is it a resolution?
Yes, we have a resolution.
If you go to the resolution, if you don't mind going there, Paula, it's a few pages down. I think it's on page 72. If you go and look at the resolution, it talks about the fact that we're using capital improvement funds to pay for these upgrades to the system. So it's not an operations budget item, it's a reserve fund item.
Oh, and my mistake, I vote aye.
Thank you.
And Director Poole, you bring up a great point, you should fire your president of the board. To that end, I saw the resolutions. I think maybe moving forward, if how we capture where the funds are coming from, because the resolution stated all, but what Director Martin's saying,
right.
if you didn't go all the way through the rest.
I noticed that as well under the item. It should be in the agenda item.
Right.
It should
say
that.
And just a detail with everything we have going on. I have 4 votes yes. Is that what you have, Paula?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on to item 15, resolution authorizing the appropriation of funds.
14.
14.
Thank you. 14. Oh, I'm sorry. They're all resolutions. Resolution authorizing district to enter into agreement with the State of California Department of Water Resources to receive a guaranteed per staff, to receive $1.3 million on behalf of the Rancho Murrieta Community Service District for water infrastructure projects, authorizing the general manager to execute the agreement on behalf of the district. Paula.
Yes, thank you. So essentially what this is an update to an item we brought back, I believe, in January, where we actually appropriated the funds. Back then, we were working with the Department of Water Resources, and at that time, the assumption was that they were going to be the administrators of this funding source, and we would have to expend the funds and then submit for reimbursement, typical of a grant reimbursement.
Right.
But since this is state funding, it's not grant funding. I believe the Department of Water Resources spent a lot of time going back and forth determining how they should administer these funds and who should administer them. And the determination that was made was that they were going to allow the districts and other beneficiaries of the state funding to receive the funds up front for these projects.
Yes.
So instead of us going through the process of losing 5% administration overhead, having Department of Water Resources be the administrator, and going through a lengthy process of expending and reimbursement, they're giving us the funds up front. And so this is going to supersede the agreement made back in January, and once executed will allow us to collect those funds almost immediately.
Very good.
Fantastic. One comment about that. I noticed, or I read somewhere, Ken Cooley is still our representative.
Yes.
And he's
yes.
going to be there till Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
So, or holiday time. So we could go to him and ask for some more money, couldn't we?
We certainly could.
Well, I mean, he basically said that he wanted to...
Well, right now is the May revise. They're working on the May revise for the California budget. So absolutely is the time to start pitching those ideas and
right.
reaching out. And
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Go, Michael.
Absolutely.
Go for it.
Any other questions from the board?
Not like that.
Then I'll make this a motion upright.
Oh. Director Paul, did you have something?
No, I was just going to say I have no question.
No.
Sorry.
I make a motion for a resolution authorizing district to enter into agreement, State of California Department of Water Resources to receive $1.3 million on behalf of the Rancho Marietta Community Service District for the water infrastructure projects, authorizing the general manager to execute this agreement on behalf of the district. Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call. President Mabee.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.
Item 15, resolution authorizing appropriation of funds from sewer replacement reserves for the purchase of lift station 6A and ratify expenditure for the amount of $14,052.
I'm going to begin by explaining what's going on here. We had the 6A lift
Great.
Station
mm-hmm.
emergency repairs, and so I have the authority to authorize the spending to a certain level out of reserve funds, but I'm obligated, after I have authorized it, we come back to the board and explain what we did. So we made the authorizations, we got things in order, the work has been done, the lift station's back on board, but we still need to bring the item to you guys and let you know this is what we did. So this is not we're asking to spend it because we already spent the money. This is just letting you know and then to appropriate the funds correctly into the budget, hence ratifying the expenses. So and there's two items on the same issue, basically
okay.
the same issue.
So I guess I have a question. Maybe this falls to Director Martin. I know when it goes to reserve funds, you have the GM has come back to us. And is it just a procedural, that's why you're coming back to us? Because it's not the dollar amount.
No. It's mostly just coming back to you to explain what we did and why.
Okay.
It used to be if there was a problem, you might have to have a special board meeting. Or
right.
if you recall,
right.
you used to have all these $3,000 and $8,000 and $12,000
Correct.
Packages that, okay, now that you approve it, we'll go buy the pump for the tertiary plant.
Right.
Now we can go get it up front, come and say, here's what we did. We're just
okay.
doing our business. And it's
okay.
just sometimes when things get bad, they can get a lot worse really quick. And so Michael is able to get on it quickly, and we solved this problem in a matter of a few days. Otherwise, we would have gotten a bigger trailer to keep up
right.
with that
no,
lift station.
No. Understand. Okay. That's what I thought. So that's why we're here. Any other questions from board members?
Just that is the that pump is what we're waiting for.
Yes.
We've done as much as we can do.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think it was split into two resolutions because
yes.
they're both under his
$25,000.
Yeah. So this one is for the pump, replacement pump.
Okay.
I make a motion of a resolution authorizing appropriation of funds from sewer replacement reserves for the purchase of lift station 6A pump and ratify the expenditures for the amount of $14,052. Can I have a second?
Second. Thank you. Roll call, President Mabee.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.
Item 16, resolution authorizing the appropriation of funds
from sewer replacement reserves for the purchase lift station 6A wiring, and ratifying the expenditures in the amount of $17,480. And I have, oh, we got to have some discussion. Are there any questions? Because it's still 6A, nothing of the board. Then that's my motion. If I could have a second.
Second.
Thank you. President Mabee.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.
Moving on to item 17, director comments. I'll just go down the line. Director Butler.
Just a quick one. I made a lot of comments to them, but I just wanted to address Tim's statement, and I want to acknowledge that there's a single thing that's important in this group, in this CSD, and that is we've got to make sure that we supply the community with what they need. And so that is finances. And in order to do that, we have to do these things that we're doing right here at this meeting. And I hope that the people who haven't been here before or haven't listened before, this is what we do. This is what we do.
As nauseating as it is, this is what we do.
It's our job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Director Janko.
Midge fly.
He's going to go running out of the room.
We're moving along.
I do have a couple things. The first, Ted left, but he's been here several times now discussing the security issue and getting an outside group to do it. And I would really like to understand that more. I hear him, I've heard Tom rebut it, I read in the general manager's report a couple of paragraphs regarding it, but I don't feel like I have a good enough understanding of it to say one way or the other whether it's a good idea. And so sometime between now and the next meeting, I would like to have some better communication on his proposal versus what we're thinking. And I'm wondering if this couldn't, maybe I missed it, but I don't believe that this has been addressed at finance. And I think maybe that might be a good place to really vet this thing, and so that we can understand the issue. That having been said, I voted yes on proceeding with the vote, because whether or not there's savings to be had or wherever this is going this year, I can see that in the future, at the very least, we can't continue to take those taxes and use them for security with the way our reserve situation is. So one way or the other, we have to get this settled, whether that's, and in my mind, that's where we're at. We're not going to spend our taxes on security anymore. And if that means security doesn't have full-time patrols or whatever it means, but we got to get this behind us and figure it out. And I think the only way to do that is by a vote, by a referendum of the people. What do you want? Do you want less security or do you want to pay more? So that's why I voted yes, and hopefully we'll get this thing settled in our lifetime.
Tom, you answered his letter.
Ted's letter?
I mean, I read that.
I answered the one he gave us before. I have to be careful what I say here, but I have a major concern. If we were to put out an RFP on the street for farming out our water treatment plant,
or our wastewater treatment plant. I think our staff, including maybe the director, might start looking for another job. And until we don't have enough money to pay, until the residents in Rancho Murrieta want to stop paying for their water, for their security, for us to manage the drains, I'm afraid of going out on the street saying we're looking for a replacement for these 13 security staffers. Mm-hmm. They are really good employees. And, you know, we have a couple people in security have been with us almost 30 years, 20 years. They really are the heart of the district when it comes to our district services. They are the face that people are greeted by every day. We have a contract with the private security company to provide us services. We offered them 3 solid 40-hour work weeks for 40-hour work weeks for 3 staff. There have been 13 people come through that company. Kelly and I have talked about it. The amount of money we have spent training people exceeds $30,000. It probably is more like $40,000. And, you know, the last one we brought in, the second they were done being trained, the first day on the job, they quit because they couldn't handle it. And now I'm not saying every private security company is going to do this, but when I was at the City of Stockton Police Department, I was responsible for putting out the RFP for citywide security services for our libraries, our parks, our swimming pools, our community centers. And there are quite a few companies out there that do it, but they do have a high rate of turnover. And we are distant from Elk Grove. Even Rancho Cordova is a 20-30 minute drive. For a job, look at our webpage that starts at $16 or $17 an hour. The folks we have right now, Kelly is building a good team. Morale is up. And if I were to go out on the street, I think we'd start losing good employees. I would rather, this is me asking you guys, I would rather wait till after the vote. Or till after we say it's not going to happen, there will be no vote. And then you tell me, how can we operate security within our means? Well, it means major cutbacks in patrol time. And we can't, and I know Ms. Matter is adamant that we shouldn't be charging administrative costs to security, but by law we have to. By law we have to take our cost of our administrative operation, payroll, the management, building, we have to deploy that to our operational budgets. And historically, the district made it a choice, is this is how we're going to do it. But every well-run district, every well-run city and county, they do what are called cost allocation plans. And it wasn't us saying, here, you only look at these numbers. We said, what do you want? They said, give us all your numbers. We'll figure it out. And the company that does this, ClearSource, out of the coast, they do this at a lot of places. Mm-hmm. And Crystal, in fact, spent a couple hours on the phone with the analyst who built the report. And, you know, honestly, I would hate to have people leave, because once the word gets out that we have an RFP on the street, they're all going to believe they've lost their jobs and they're going to go look for more jobs.
To kind of stop this conversation a little bit, and I agree everything you said, Tom. I think where Director Janko was going is really just to understand what that proposal that Mr. Hart has. And is there any validity to the numbers?
That's exactly right. Yeah. I'm not talking about putting an RFP out. I'm not talking about changing how we charge administration costs. To me, I don't get how you could come up with the idea that the as big a part of this organization as security is, that it shouldn't get some administration allocated in it. And we were told how to allocate that. It's not like we came up with that number. But just to reiterate what Tim said and make myself clear, I just want to understand.
And I did review Ted's 2 proposals. One of them was from a firm that has 2 people.
And I don't know, and I didn't dig deep into it.
And again, just, okay. just to kind of stop it here, I would say, because of your depth of knowledge, Tom, just schedule a meeting with Director Janko and just kind of walk him through the proposals. And basically, and Randy, to your point, no one's advocating it. It's almost as you said and as Tom said, we're going a method, and truly the taxpayers are going to decide. Is it $131? Is it $96? You know, whatever we decide, it goes to a ballot measure. If they choose to keep the level of service outstanding, if they choose not to, then decisions just have to be made on where it's going to be. And that's then that next step of where we go. That puts us into somewhere 23, and probably realistically as efficient as government works, 2024 before we come permanent solution, as opposed to just reducing services, this is where it's at. So, yeah, I would say spend a little bit of time with Director Janko, yeah. And just, if nothing else, Randy understands where we're going. Just, again, I appreciate Mr. Hart's enthusiasm, but we just have to quantify what that looks like, and is it really there? And I think that's what Director Janko's asking.
I agree. Okay. I just wanted to clarify my mind there, and I apologize if I went on too long.
It was clear, believe me. Director Pohl.
Oh, I have nothing more to add.
All right. All I have is for Paula, Michael, Kelly, Tom, thank you, and thank your staff. It's the items that come up for such a small organization, and obviously our legal counsel can attest to it. It's something all the time, and staff is able to deal with it. So thank you for the maturity and the leadership, and as we move through the budget process. Director Pohl, continue Hawaii, and you shouldn't have called it. With that, I make a motion to to close out the meeting. Can I have a second?
Second.
Roll call, President Mabee?
Aye.
Director Janko?
Aye.
Director Butler?
Aye.
Director Pohl?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.